taken over the kingdom. He's been installed as the king, and his father Uttanapad has gone to the forest to practice austerities. We heard about the opulences of the place or the kingdom of Dhruva Maharaj, previously of Uttanapad. How wonderful it was. So, while Dhruva Maharaj is the king, Maitreya tells Vidura as follows. My dear Vidura, thereafter, Dhruva Maharaj married the daughter of Prajapati Sushumara, whose name was Brahmi, and two sons named Kalpa and Vatsara were born of her. The greatly powerful Dhruva Maharaj had another wife named Ila, who was the daughter of the demigod Vayu. By her, he begot a son named Utkal and a very beautiful daughter. Dhruva Maharaj's younger brother Uttam, who was still unmarried, once went on a hunting excursion and was killed by a powerful yaksha in the Himalayan mountains. I've heard Prabhupada pronounce, maybe we can make this a little bit lower. The word yaksha, he called it a jaka. So once he had traveled, the brother Uttam, he had traveled to the Himalayas. And there's all different kinds of, different varieties of people there. So while Uttam was there, he was killed by a powerful yaksha in the Himalayan mountains. And along with him, his mother, Saruchi, also followed the path of her son. She died as well, because she was very upset when she heard that her son had died, so she went to follow him, and she was burnt in a forest fire. So how did Dhruva Maharaj take that? He was the king, he was married, he had his children. What did Dhruva Maharaj do when his brother, younger brother, half-brother, was killed by a yaksha? When Dhruva Maharaj heard of the killing of his brother, Uttama, by the yaksha in the Himalayan mountains, being overwhelmed with lamentation and anger, he got on his chariot and went out for victory over the city of the yakshas, which was called the Lakapuri. Purport. It's a very short purport, but quite interesting. Dhruva Maharaj is becoming angry, overwhelmed with grief, and envious of his enemies, was not incompatible with his position as a great devotee. It is a misunderstanding that a devotee should not be angry, envious, or overwhelmed by lamentation. Dhruva Maharaj was the king, and when his brother was unceremoniously killed, it was his duty to take revenge against the yakshas from the Himalayas. So it is not that a devotee doesn't have any emotions or sentiments. No, he's very, very strong, actually, in his emotions, directed towards Krishna especially. Everything for a devotee is directed towards Krishna. So very, very strong. And Narottama Das Thakur describes this in Prem Bhakti Chandrika, that a devotee should be angry, but the anger should be directed properly. He can be greedy, but not like a materialist is greedy for his own sense pleasure. A devotee should be greedy for association of advanced devotees. And he should be angry at the bhakti dvesh, those who are envious of devotees. Can be very angry at them. He can be envious of them too. So Dhruva Maharaj was the king. And when his brother was unceremoniously killed, it was his duty to take revenge against the yakshas. So Dhruva Maharaj decided to They had the audacity to kill one of the royal members of his family, and now they were going to get a taste of what empowered royalty was actually like. Because in the Vedic system, when the kings were present, they were so bold and no one could go against them. They protected not only their brothers but all the citizens, and the citizens didn't only include the humans. Anyone, praja, means that anyone who had taken their birth in their land, they gave protection. So Maharaj Prickett, one time, we heard in the first canto that he was out traveling and he saw a cow was being beaten. And he immediately took out his sword and was going to kill the person. You dare do this in my kingdom? Because everyone needs protection. Every living entity needs protection. So Dhruva Maharaj wanted to teach the Yakshas a lesson. So he went into the northern direction of the Himalayan range. In a valley, he saw a city full of ghostly persons who were followers of Lord Shiva. Prabhupada says in the purport, in this verse, it is stated that the Yakshas are more or less devotees of Lord Shiva. By this indication, the Yakshas may be taken to be the Himalayan tribes like the Tibetans. Even though people nowadays have, they think the Tibetans and the Tibetan religion. You know where the Tibetan religion actually came from? You know? Bengal.
Europe? All you know is a lot of countries come from Europe. Before the world, it was Europe.
No, their religion actually came from Bengal. It was brought there. Everything comes from Bengal. So, even though the Tibetan religions and things are quite popular nowadays, in a very sentimental way, in one sense, let's turn the microphone off. But these kind of people they're actually very, I mean, not the higher class people, but they tend in the mode of ignorance, very much in the mode of ignorance.
Form of Buddhism?
Really? Tibetan Buddhism is, yeah. But the people, and also they worship up in that region, in the Himachal Pradesh, which is near that region. And that's where all the Tibetans went after China took over. And they worship forest spirits, and every village has something to worship. Like that, but all very motive ignorance, these things. Mm-hmm. And you can perceive this very clearly just in dealing with the people, just being in their presence. So Dhruva Maharaj went there and he saw this city full of ghostly persons who were the followers of Lord Shiva, which means that they were in the mode of ignorance, basically, type of people. My dear Vidura, Maitreya continued, as soon as Dhruva Maharaj reached Alakapuri, he immediately blew his conch shell, and the sound reverberated throughout the entire sky and in every direction. The wives of the Yakshas became very much frightened. From their eyes, it was apparent that they were full of anxiety. O hero Vidura, Maitreya Muni said, the greatly powerful heroes of the Yakshas, unable to tolerate the resounding vibration of the conch shell of Dhruva Maharaj, they came forth from their city with weapons and attacked Dhruva. They could understand that Dhruva Maharaj, by blowing his conch shell, he was attacking. He was challenging them. So they came out with their weapons. There was only one Dhruva Maharaj, but many of them came out. Dhruva Maharaj, who was a great charioteer and certainly a great bowman also, immediately began to kill them by simultaneously discharging arrows three at a time. When the heroes of the Yakshas saw that their heads were being thus threatened by Dhruva Maharaj, they could very easily understand their awkward position. They understood how powerful Dhruva was, and they concluded that they would certainly be defeated. but as heroes they lorded the action of Yuva. Purport. This spirit of fighting and a sporting attitude is very significant in this verse. The Yakshas were severely attacked. Dhruva Maharaj was their enemy. But still, upon witnessing the wonderful heroic acts of Maharaj Dhruva, they were very pleased with him. This straightforward appreciation of an enemy's prowess is a characteristic of real Kshatriya spirit. So, he was their enemy, but he was fighting so powerfully, so that they understood, oh, he is a wonderful, wonderful warrior. They appreciated him. And although they understood they were in an awkward position, the particular mood of a Kshatriya, the Kshatriya spirit, is, let me die fighting. Because that spirit is based on some knowledge. And if one dies fighting in the proper consciousness, one will be elevated to the heavenly planets. This will be described later. You'll get a very wonderful birth. Why? Because it's easy to talk, oh, I'm not my body, and we're all not our body. But to fight in this spirit, they had to be fixed in that realization, truly fixed. They had to realize it. And that realization, that fixedness of realization, even if they were killed, would greatly elevate them. So this is they were real Kshatriyas. They had that real spirit. They appreciated Dhruva Maharaja's greatness. Just like serpents who cannot tolerate being trampled upon by anyone's feet, the Yakshas, being intolerant of the wonderful prowess of Dhruva Maharaja, threw twice as many arrows, six from each of their soldiers, and thus they very valiantly exhibited their prowess. The Yaksha soldiers were 130,000 strong, all greatly angry and all desiring to defeat the wonderful activities of Dhruva Maharaj. With full strength, they showered upon Maharaj Dhruva, along with his chariot and charioteers, various types of feathered arrows, iron bludgeons, swords, tridents, lances, pikes, spears, and Bhushundi weapons. Dhruva Maharaj was completely covered by an incessant shower of weapons, just as a mountain is covered by incessant rainfall. So Dhruva Maharaj, even though he was so much overwhelmed by the thousands and thousands of weapons being thrown upon him, still he didn't succumb, he didn't go under, although he was practically speaking covered with weapons. All the siddhas from the higher planetary systems were observing the fight from the sky. And when they saw that Dhruva Maharaj had been covered by the incessant arrows of the enemy, they roared tumultuously, "The grandson of Manu, Dhruva, is now lost." They cried that Dhruva Maharaj was just like the sun that now he had set within the ocean of the Yakshas. Prabhupada explains in the second paragraph. The denizens of the planet Siddhaloka, where the residents can fly in the sky without airplanes, were anxious over Dhruva Maharaj's welfare in the battlefield. Srila Rupa Goswami says, therefore, that not only is a devotee well protected by the Supreme Lord, but all the demigods and even ordinary men are anxious for his security and safety. The comparison given here, that Dhruva Maharaj appeared to merge in the ocean of the Yakshas, is also significant. When the sun sets on the horizon, it appears that the sun drowns in the ocean. But factually, the sun has no difficulty. Similarly, although Dhruva appeared to drown in the ocean of the Yakshas, he had no difficulty. As the sun rises again in due course at the end of night, so Dhruva Maharaj, although he might have been in difficulty, because after all it was a fight, and in any fighting activity there are reverses, that did not mean that he was defeated. The Yakshas, being temporarily victorious, exclaimed that they had conquered Dhruva Maharaj. But in the meantime, Dhruva Maharaj's chariot suddenly appeared, just as the sun suddenly appears from within foggy mist. So two examples have been given about the sun. The sun appears to set or be extinguished when it sets in the west in the ocean, and appears to go down and be covered by the ocean. But actually the sun has no difficulty, it's not extinguished at all. It rises again later. So that's one example. And the other example is that the sun may be covered. You may not be able to see it, we may not be able to see it because of a fog that's covering it. But then the sun, due to its extreme brightness, it burns its way out and suddenly the sun is visible. So Dhruva Maharaj was powerful like the sun in both cases. Covered by the weapons of the yakshas, he was not in difficulty. Or as Prabhupada says, even though he may have been in difficulty, he was not defeated, like the sun doesn't get extinguished when it goes into the water, when it appears to go into the water. And also, due to Dhruva Maharaj's power, he was going to appear as the sun appears from fog. Dhruva Maharaj's bow and arrows twanged and hissed, causing lamentation in the hearts of his enemy. He began to shoot incessant arrows, shattering all their different weapons, just as the blasting wind shatters the assembled clouds in the sky. The great sage Maitreya continued narrating, "My dear Vidura, the heads of those who were cut to pieces by the arrows of Dhruva Maharaj were decorated very beautifully with earrings and turbans." So when ordinary people think of these type of ghastly scenes, they become horrified. Well, heroes, people who have that temperament, people have a warrior's temperament, they actually become very enlivened when they hear about this type of fighting. So the legs of their bodies cut off were as beautiful as golden palm trees. Their arms were decorated with golden bracelets and armlets, and on their heads were very valuable helmets bedecked with gold. All these ornaments lying on that battlefield were very attractive and could bewilder the mind of a hero. So very interesting. When they would dress up in their gold and jewels when they would go and fight. And the mood was, he who is victorious gains all this as booty. So that inspires the warriors to fight still harder. Because after all, you kill the person and he's dead. His head is chopped off and he has gold and jewels, necklaces and things like that, gold helmets. And they would take this at the end, the victorious, to the victors. The spoils of war come. So it inspires these kind of people, the Kshatriya types. But also on the other side, if you're fighting and you start thinking too much about the gold and the jewels that you're going to get and become distracted by that, you'll end up dead. So it had both sides to it. The remaining yakshas, who were somehow or another not killed, had their limbs cut to pieces by the arrows of the great warrior Dhruva Maharaj. Thus they began to flee, just as elephants flee when defeated by a lion. Dhruva Maharaj, the best of human beings, observed that in that great battlefield, not one of the opposing soldiers was left standing with proper weapons. He then desired to see the city of the Alakapuri. He decided to go into the city because there were no more soldiers left. But he thought to himself, no one knows the plans of the mystic yakshas, because these kind of people, through their worship of Lord Shiva, they end up with many bewildering powers. In the meantime, while Dhruva Maharaj, doubtful of his mystic enemies, was talking with his charioteer, they heard a tremendous sound as if the whole ocean were there. And they found that from the sky a great dust storm was coming over them from all directions. Within a moment, the whole sky was overcast with dense clouds, and severe thundering was heard. There was glittering electric lightning and severe rainfall. Maitreya continues, "My dear faultless Vidur, in that rainfall there was blood, mucus, pus, stool, urine, and marrow falling heavily before Dhruva Maharaj, and there were trunks of bodies falling from the sky. Next, a great mountain was visible in the sky." This was all due to their mystic powers. "And from all directions, hailstones fell along with lances, clubs, swords, iron bludgeons, and great pieces of stone. Dhruva Maharaj also saw many big serpents with angry eyes vomiting forth fire and coming to devour him, along with groups of mad elephants, lions, and tigers." So they had created all this to confuse Dhruva Maharaj. "Then, as if it were the time of the dissolution of the whole world, the fierce sea with foaming waves and great roaring sounds came forward before him. The demon yakshas are by nature very heinous, and by their demoniac power of illusion, they can create many strange phenomena to frighten one who is less intelligent. When the great sages heard that Dhruva Maharaj was overpowered by the illusory magic tricks of the demons, they immediately assembled to offer him auspicious encouragement. All the sages said, 'Dear Dhruva, O son of King Uttanapad, may the Supreme Personality of Godhead known as Sharana Dhanva, who relieves the distresses of his devotees, may he kill all your threatening enemies. The holy name of the Lord,' they told Dhruva, 'is as powerful as the Lord himself. Therefore, simply by chanting and hearing the holy names of the Lord, many men can be fully protected from fierce death without difficulty. Thus a devotee is saved.'" So we think in one sense this is quite amazing. There Dhruva was on the battlefield being overwhelmed by the mystic powers, the mystic forces of these yakshas, and the sages assembled to help him. And what did they tell him? Basically, "You chant Hare Krishna. You take shelter of Krishna's names. Nama abhidhaya nashamya chadha yan nama dheyam. You take shelter of Krishna's names, because that places one fully under the protection of Krishna. Because Krishna and his names are the same. Abhinatvam namanamano." So when one is with Krishna, what difficulty can actually befall him? So a devotee is protected and saved, especially from fierce death. Because the externals of the circumstances that we're in, they may not be changed. They may be changed if Krishna desires and we take shelter of his names, because he's all powerful. He can protect, just like he protected Prahlad Maharaj. Nrisingadev came out and killed his envious father, burst out of the pillar and he killed Hiranyakashipu. But it's not that Krishna will always do that. He has his own ways of protecting as he likes. But ultimately, the ultimate protection that Krishna gives is the protection of the soul from death. And death comes from identifying with a body. So if someone holds on tightly to Krishna's names at the time of death, then he is transferred over the ocean of death, over the ocean of death to the spiritual world. So all difficult circumstances in this life are actually practice sessions for us to prepare for this ultimate situation where nothing material will give us any shelter at all. The ultimate situation being death. And how we have lived our life, will be tested at the moment of death. What will our consciousness hold tightly to? What will our consciousness hold tightly to at the moment of death? Will we be determined and fearlessly holding on to Krishna's names despite the pains that death brings? Or we think of our family members or our bank balance or some secret that we wanted to tell somebody that we never got a chance to tell them, or our faithful dog who has protected us from intruders. What will we think of at the moment of death? That is the perfection of attachment. Just like it said, Prabhupada explained, that devotees can get angry. Well, similarly, devotees should get attached. We talk about detachment so much, but actually more important is attachment. Attachment to what? Sakti, attachment to Krishna. This is the perfection of Krishna consciousness, to become so attached to Krishna, just like we become attached to so many things in this world. We should become attached to Krishna, but even more so. And that attachment should overwhelm us. That is actually wonderful. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The great rishis approached Dhruva Maharaj at a time when his mind was very perplexed due to the magical feats exhibited by the Yakshas. A devotee is always protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By his inspiration only, the sages came to encourage Dhruva Maharaj and assure him that there was no danger because he was a soul fully surrendered to the Supreme Lord. By the grace of the Lord, if a devotee at the time of death can simply chant his holy names, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, simply by chanting this Maha Mantra, he immediately surpasses the great ocean of the material sky and enters the spiritual sky. He never has to come back for repetition of birth and death. Simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one can surpass the ocean of death. So Dhruva Maharaj was certainly able to surpass the illusory magical feats of the Yakshas, which for the time being disturbed his mind. So Dhruva Maharaj, this was actually Krishna's mercy. This is actually how, when we think, how do we want Krishna to be merciful to us. So this is how, when Krishna wants to be merciful to someone, Guru Krishna Vasadevaya Bhakti Latimesh. Brahmanda Pramate Konyam Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Vasadevaya. When Krishna puts one in contact with devotees, that is how Krishna, the way Krishna exhibits mercy in this material world. Because by that, one can get out of the material world completely. So we'll start chapter 11. When Dhruva Maharaj heard the encouraging words, "Don't worry, Dhruva, you are under the protection of the Lord. You take shelter of Him. Don't become bewildered. Because in difficult circumstances, especially dangerous circumstances, they are the test of what we're attachment to. What does our mind naturally go to?" Prabhupada once said that somebody was riding a bicycle or something, a devotee in the early days or something like that, and a car hit him, and he wasn't seriously hurt, but he was knocked off the bicycle or something, and he chanted. So Prabhupada said, this means he is liberated. Because if in a difficult, dangerous circumstance we hold on to Krishna, this means that we're properly situated. But it is not difficult to do. Sometimes, I've had this experience so many times, actually, something heavy happens and you start thinking, oh no! Or something like that, or some four-letter word or something escapes from one's mouth or something. So these are all telling us We don't like dangerous, difficult circumstances, but they are tests for us. Tests to let us see how we are doing. How well are we are prepared. For what? For anything can happen in this world. So, and the inevitable will happen. It must happen. So the tests, the exams we get every day to let us know where our consciousness goes when we're in difficulty, they are very important for us. Very important for us to gauge where our attachments are and remind us where our attachments should be. So Dhruva Maharaj, encouraged by the sages, and that's how Krishna showed his mercy to Dhruva Maharaj. He sent a devotee there, devotees there, to remind him. So what did he do? When Dhruva Maharaj heard the encouraging words of the great sages, he performed Achman by touching water and then took up his arrow made by Lord Narayan and fixed it upon his bow. He had an arrow made by the Lord. Here's a purport. Dhruva Maharaj was given a specific arrow made by Lord Narayan himself, and he now fixed it upon his bow to finish the illusory atmosphere created by the yakshas. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etan tarantite. Without Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, no one is able to overcome the action of the illusory energy. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has also given us a nice weapon for this age to overcome, make Maya vanish. As stated in the Bhagavatam, Sangopangastra, in this age, the Narayana Astra. Sangopangastra, astra means weapon. A weapon to drive away Maya is the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra in pursuance of the associates of Lord Chaitanya, such as Adwaita Prabhu Nityananda, Gadadhar, and Shivas. So as soon as Dhruva Maharaj joined the Narayan Astra arrow to his bow, immediately, he didn't even fire the arrow, but as soon as he joined it to his bow, the illusion created by the yakshas was immediately vanquished, just as all material pains and pleasures are vanquished when one becomes fully cognizant of the self. Purport. Krishna is like the sun, and Maya, or the illusory energy of Krishna, is like darkness. Darkness means absence of light. Similarly, Maya means absence of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness and Maya are always there, side by side. As soon as there is an awakening of Krishna consciousness, all the illusory pains and pleasures of material existence are vanquished. Mayam etam tarantite. Constant chanting of the Maha Mantra will keep us always aloof from the illusory energy of Maya. Because darkness and light cannot exist simultaneously. And similarly, Krishna and illusion cannot exist side by side in the sense of at the same place at the same time, any more than light and darkness can be there simultaneously. If the light is fully on, there is no darkness. And as soon as there is darkness, as soon as the darkness comes, the light, that means there is no light. So similarly, as soon as we take shelter of Krishna, immediately Maya will go. Depending upon how much we take shelter of Krishna, just like we can put the light down a little bit, we can dim it. But a little light is better than no light. We can see. So similarly, when the darkness of Maya, we may be to different degrees freed from the darkness of Maya, light may be illuminating our consciousness. But at least a little light, a little illumination, a little knowledge is better than none. At least the beginning of being able to see is there. And that gives us the facility to turn the light brighter and brighter and And ultimately, this constant chanting of the holy names of Krishna will keep Maya out completely. So even as Dhruva Maharaj fixed that weapon, the weapon made by Narayan Rishi, into his bow, arrows with golden shafts and feathers like the wings of swans flew out from it. They entered the enemy's soldiers with a great hissing sound, just as a peacock enters a forest with tumultuous crowing. Those sharp arrows dismayed the enemy soldiers, who became almost unconscious. But various yakshas on the battlefield, in a rage against Dhruva Maharaj, somehow or another, collected their weapons and attacked, just as serpents, agitated by Garuda, rushed towards Garuda with upraised hoods. All the yaksha soldiers prepared to overcome Dhruva Maharaj with their upraised weapons, so they counterattacked. When Dhruva Maharaj saw the yakshas coming forward, he immediately took his arrows and cut the enemies to pieces, separating their arms, legs, heads, and bellies from their bodies. Even their bellies. I can't even imagine what that was. He delivered the yakshas to the planetary system, which is situated above the sun globe, and which is attainable only by first-class brahmacharis who have never discharged their semen. So one can think, oh, this is so horrible. Dhruva Maharaj is killing so many people. But actually, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, when Krishna kills someone directly, or a devotee of Krishna does this, kills someone directly, those personalities who are killed are benefited. Anything done by Krishna is good. That is the meaning of the absolute truth. There is no duality connected with him. There is not the dualities of this world, good and bad, heat and cold. Everything is good that Krishna does. So in the battle of Kurukshetra, so many people were killed, thousands of millions of people, and everyone was liberated because of it being done in the presence of Krishna. And already it's been said that in this day and age, the weapon that is given us is not like Dhruva Maharaj with arrows, because we don't have the consciousness to kill others and think we're doing them benefit. We don't have the purity, but rather we have a different kind of weapon in this age, and that is the chanting of Hare Krishna. And as Prabhupada has explained, that our mission is to kill the demonic tendencies of the people first. We have to kill our own demonic tendencies, our tendencies to act adversely to Krishna. Or simultaneously, we have to help people. We should try and help people kill their own demonic tendencies. By how? By what weapon? We should take the weapon ourselves and distribute that weapon. And that is the chanting of the holy names, Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So the arrows were shooting like the hissing, whew, killing so many. When Swayambhuva Manu saw that his grandson Dhruva Maharaj was killing so many of the yakshas who were not actually offenders, because we remember that, why did Dhruva Maharaj go to Alakapuri? Because Uttam, his brother, one brother had been killed. So Dhruva Maharaj he became angry that this had occurred. So because of one being killed, so many were now being killed, and they weren't even the ones who had done it. So Swayambhuva Manu, Uttanapad's father, so Dhruva Maharaj's grandfather, he saw that his grandson Dhruva Maharaj was killing so many of the yakshas who were not actually offenders. And out of his great compassion, he approached Dhruva with great sages to give him good instructions. Okay, I think we'll stop here. Are there any questions? Or, thank you. Or comments? Yeah.
The point you're making, that story, the man got hit by the bike, and that's what I was saying, because he chanted Krishna's name, he was liberated. Sometimes devotees get in the habit that, you know, you just automatically, you know, say Krishna if something, you know, unexpected happens, whatever. But it's more out of habit, unconsciously. I mean, is that still a liberated state you'd consider, or?
But we can first say that it's good that we should chant Krishna's names consciously, habitually. Anyway, of course, it's better to chant with great loving affection. But still, Krishna is so powerful, and in his name. And even when we see with Ajamil, when he was dying, he called out the name of his son Narayan, Narayana. And first he was just calling his son, but when he called his son Narayana, he remembered Narayan, the Lord. And that remembrance comes from Krishna, by Krishna's mercy. So if a devotee is a devotee, if someone is a devotee, then Krishna will give him some special help in his remembrance. So it's a wonderful habit, actually, to constantly always chant Hare Krishna. It's the perfection of Krishna consciousness. Always chant Hare Krishna, never forget Krishna. So when Lord Chaitanya was cleaning the Gaudiya temple with the devotees, all the communications they were doing with each other, they would do it with the holy names. Hare Bol, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, always they were saying Krishna's names. Krishna, Krishna. Krishna, 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 Krishna. So if we can develop this habit, it would be wonderful. Srila Rupa Goswami says that not only is a devotee well protected by the Supreme Lord, but all the demigods and even ordinary persons are anxious for his security and safety. No, I don't know where that comes from. But it goes back to the that point that when Dhruva Maharaj came home from the forest, his stepmother Saruchi was there, and she was so touched by his good qualities. Dhruva Maharaj bowed down, even though she was very inimical to Dhruva previously, and her words were the words that drove him away. But when Dhruva had increased his devotion, she too became affectionate to him. So Prabhupada explained in his purport that this is the nature of a devotee, that, and he gave the example of the six Goswamis, Lokaram, Hitakarana, Chibhuvane, Manyo, Saranya, that everyone naturally, it's just natural as water. He said this, as water naturally flows down, the affection of everyone naturally flows to a devotee. Why? Is it something that's everyone has to love a devotee? No, it's not like that. It's not an order. But it's that a devotee has wonderful qualities. Very, very kind and mild and humble. Really, a devotee is all auspicious like that. Such a gentle person. We read the 26 qualities of a devotee, and they are very wonderful. Very wonderful. They're everything a mother ever wanted for her son to be. So naturally, when someone is meek and humble and has so many good qualities, naturally everyone feels affection for them. So even the demigods appreciate the qualities of a devotee, especially that quality of his dependence on Krishna. So it's natural, but I don't know exactly what Rupa Goswami said. Hare Krishna. Any other questions or comments? So, yeah.
Virgin Prabhu, in relationship to Manjana Prabhu's question,
yeah.
If one, for that matter, is doing aarti or anything, or even calling up Krishna's name, but if his mind is on something else at that time, but actually not on the name or not on the deity call,
yes.
Is the consciousness of the mind, does it outweigh the word one is saying?
Well, see, the tendency, always, whatever we do, is to do it superficially. Especially if we're doing the same thing regularly. The tendency is always to fall into superficiality, to do it on an external level. So there's certainly a difference between chanting with great bhava, with great love, and chanting superficially, just mechanically, or without thinking. So there's certainly a difference. So, but then the question comes: well, what do we do? Or do we want to? What do we want to tell people who are doing the arti mechanically, or the way we chant rounds sometimes, or do a service, or anything? We forget Krishna in the midst of it. So. For instance, when we're doing when he describes potent deity worship, he says Shraddha Visheshita Priti Sri Murtira Angri Sevana Sevane. That with Shraddha Vishesh, with a great faith in what? Faith that the deity is Krishna, is actually Krishna. That's actually Gaura, that's actually Nittai. So if one is thinking that this is actually Krishna, that's naturally he's going to be attentive. So Shraddha, with great faith, Visheshita, priti, and great, great loving affection. So it's Krishna, we have affection for him. So in this way, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami Maharaj says, Sri Murtira Angri, we should worship the lotus feet of the deity. So in this way, similarly, we should chant Krishna's holy names. So we may not be on that level, it describes Narottama, there's an astaka, prayers that describe Narottama Das Thakur, that he says, as soon as he hears the sound of the mridanga, his feet start dancing like that in ecstasy. So as soon as we hear the holy names, if we think about Krishna, know that Krishna is no different from his name, that's actually the stage of bhava. So that's advanced consciousness. To actually experience Krishna none different from his name is bhava bhakti, very advanced consciousness. So at least we should know that this is the goal of purification. So we're performing the sadhana, the practices, to get us to this point of realization. And we should know that the tendency always is to do things superficially and mechanically, especially things that we do every day. So since that's the case, if we do it superficially, it's not satisfying to the heart. So we become aware, and what we want to do is change. But the question is, what do we change? The tendency is to want to change, make an external change. Because this isn't satisfying me, the newness is worn off. So let me just change and flip to something other external thing. But no, rather that's an indication that we need a deepening. That the level that we're doing, practicing our Krishna consciousness on, has to be deepened. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Okay, so tomorrow we'll... So Swayambhuva Manu has told Dhruva, please stop killing, you're killing so many of them. Now he's going to, and he's going to preach to him. Stop. Okay, thank you very much.